Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the Mental Health Comedy Podcast. I'm your co-host, Ed Krasnick. My co-host, Jennifer Kolari, coming along shortly. She's a licensed therapist, and I'm an erotic Jew. That's basically where we leave it. On today's show, a wonderful comedian, very talented, multi-talented, and has a special on Amazon Prime, which is one of the best titles I've ever heard for a special. Her name is Erica Rhodes. She's going to join us shortly. And the title of her special is La Vie en Rhodes. That is such a cool title. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about today. We're the show that explores mental health. We talk about mental health issues. There's a lot of talk going on about mental health everywhere. But we also like to practice skills because mental health is a practice. It's something that you actually do. And when I say you, I mean me. It's something that we do every minute of every day. We're just not aware of it. And so now we're learning how we can shift things, you know, and why feelings come on. It's about how we relate to our thoughts and feelings. And you would think that we would have a lot of practice at this, but we really don't because I don't know why. I don't know what the answer is. We have all kinds of advances in technology, but in mental health, not a ton of advances. So we're going to work with that. So on today's show, I thought we could talk about relationships, and I thought we could talk about dating post-pandemic and what intimacy is. I don't know what it is, but I'm just throwing it out to the group. Sit back, relax, take whatever medication you're on, take it now, and we're going to enjoy the ride. It's going to be an emotional roller coaster. Throw your hands up in the air like you just do care. I sound like an FM DJ from 1984. Here we go. We always like to welcome people based on wherever they're at emotionally. So here are emotional shout-outs. If you're on a dating app and dream of someone taking a swipe at you, welcome. If you feel like the butterflies in your stomach should be on Zoloft, welcome. If you gave your mom a BetterHelp gift card, welcome. If you want to go out but also feel like you want to stay home and you're doing an emotional cha-cha, welcome. If your default response to everything is, what do I look like, a magician to you? Welcome. If you sprained your lips because you're not used to smiling, welcome. And if you want to go swimming but don't feel like changing your pajamas and wish there was something called a pajama-kini, welcome. And if you're beating yourself up even now, there's always a place for you right here on the Mental Health Comedy Podcast. Today's show is brought to you by the new dating app, Datari. Datari actually lets you simulate dates with real people. Datari lets you deal with all the stuff that trips you up on a date, from conversation starters to desperation station to overexpecting to reading physical cues to expressing simple things like the truth. Datari lets you practice in a safe, fun, playful environment using artificial intelligence dating apparatus. It's the dating safari because it's a jungle out there. Have fun with it with Datari. And now, I want to welcome the High Priestess of the Hippocampus. I want to welcome the Sultan of Serotonin. I want to welcome the Queen of Oxytocin. And that is Jennifer Kolari. Jennifer, how's your post-pandemic going?
It's going well. We're good. At first it was a bit overwhelming, but it feels wonderful now. Things are starting to settle. It's nice.
Okay. So that's a good thing to hear. And you probably see a lot of this in your practice at connectedparenting.com. You should learn more about Connected Parenting. We'll talk about Jennifer's work. But relationships, dating, intimacy, how have these issues been affected for the people that you're seeing because of the pandemic?
Yeah, well, I mean, it definitely has. And lots of the young people I work with basically were just saying there was nothing. I mean, there wasn't even anybody on the apps. There was nothing happening.
Right.
What can you do? You can do a FaceTime date. You can go on a walk. It was just very awkward and it wasn't great. And it sort of had two different impacts. So my clients and people out there that are kind of introverts, the pandemic's been kind of nice. It's given you an excuse to not have to put yourself out there and not worry. And then for the extroverts, it's been really hard. They've been having a hard time. They've been missing that social life, that experience with other people. So it's been tough. But I feel like everyone's had a bit of a transition to get back into normal life. A lot of people, when things were just opening up, were feeling really nervous. Social anxiety was higher than normal. Do I even remember how to do this? Do I know how to have a conversation? So there's been a lot of anxiety kind of re-entering. But I think it's starting to settle down now. I even saw this with little kids. But now there's no excuses. It's time to get back out there if you're ready to meet somebody. So,
what are the tools or what is a skill that you can use? I mean, going out on a date is a frightening thing for a lot of people.
It is, yeah.
What is something that you can do to actually connect yourself in the moment? And for me, I don't know about people out there, but I dated in the Pleistocene era in the Andrew Johnson administration, not the Lyndon Johnson, the Andrew Johnson. So it's been a long time. But one of the things that I remember that was so challenging for me was over expectation. Expectations mm-hmm. really yeah. did me in.
Yeah.
How do you deal with expectations?
Well, listen, it's not easy, but there are definitely things you can do. So I have a few suggestions for people getting out there in the dating world. First of all, there's one relationship that's more important than any other, and that's the relationship between you and you, right? So the first thing I would suggest is really working on your relationship with yourself, your self-esteem, your self-worth, because really you attract what you believe. How you see yourself is that's the kind of person that's going to come back to you, right? So here's my first suggestion, and people can practice this before they even get back out into the dating world. And I suggest you do this for a little bit. Basically, I want you to think if you had a bank account, it was like at minus 100,000 and you put in $5, you're not going to notice. It's not going to make any difference. Building your self-esteem is a little bit like that. When you have been mean to yourself and insulted yourself and not believed in yourself for so long, when you think a few positive thoughts about yourself, it's not going to make any difference. For a long time, it's not going to make a difference. Probably for months, it's not going to make a difference. But I want people to start thinking about building that bank, building up that bank account. So, and it's literally like, oh, that was nice of me to do that. Oh, that was very kind of me. Oh, congratulations, me. That was awesome. Just find little things all day long that you note and pay attention to that you're proud of, that are positive, that are really good about you. And we don't do this. We're great at doing it about the negative things about ourselves. We do it all day long. But I think it's really important to start building that neural hardware where we start noticing ourselves for doing positive things, congratulating ourselves, feeling good. Do that all day and start making these tiny deposits. Now, it's going to take a long time to get to zero. But once you get to zero and then you continue to do it, now you're in a much different position. Now you're a better friend to yourself. We talk to ourselves in ways that we would never talk to other human beings. Like, and it's so important to be a good friend to yourself. Now what we're doing is we're radiating an entirely different belief about ourselves. And now when you go into the dating world, you're going to have higher expectations. You're not going to settle. You're not going to hang on to something that deep in your gut feels like it's not right. Your standards are going to go up and you're going to have a much easier time. It's okay to be a little bit pickier. And then the other thing I would do, Ed, is I would go on dates in your head. We talk a lot about imagineering. Imagine yourself going on a date, having an easy time, having a conversation, having a very pleasant time. Look and think of your first few dates as just practice getting back out there, which helps with it. What you were saying, Ed, which is the letting go. When you hold on too deeply, when you have that angst, that kind of energy, the other person can pick it up. And it will make you much less picky and settle when you shouldn't. So actually sort of imagining that you're going on these dates and having a really fun time, just a really easygoing time, what that will do is that will practice, that will help your brain with familiarity. So it'll think you've been doing this and it's been going pretty well. And then when you're actually on that date, it's going to go a little easier.
Yeah, that's great. Imagining and how you talk to yourself. And also when you're imagining the date, or maybe you're imagining a great date that you did have, or a person that you're very comfortable with, feel the feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine it in your head, and you've talked about this a lot, and Neville Goddard's work, feel the feeling while you're imagining it in your head.
Yeah. Yep.
So, and it doesn't even have to be a feeling about a date. You could be imagining something that just makes you feel good.
Yeah.
So that's really great. And Jennifer, very quickly, I want to do this. Let's pretend right now, because you can rehearse anything in mm-hmm. life. Mm-hmm. Let's pretend that you and I are the same person. We're one person.
Okay.
And we're having a conversation. I'm going to be some thoughts, and then you're going to answer the thoughts about how you might be able to attend to the thoughts.
We're the same person. And you're doing the negative thoughts, the yucky thoughts.
I'm doing the negative thoughts, right?
Okay.
And then you're gonna answer the negative thoughts respond in some way.
Okay.
Okay. And really what I'm driving at how people could respond.
Sure.
Okay. I'm not driving at like, oh, let's give an example of how people usually respond. I want the here's how to talk to negative thoughts.
Okay, let's do it.
Okay, so here we go. Okay, and this is while we're on a date. We're on a date, we're one person. I wonder if I can explain this any further. Here we go. Okay, so, oh my God, she doesn't like me. She's totally not attracted to me. I suck.
Okay, so this is tricky because you can't have too many complicated thoughts. Otherwise, you're going to look like you're spacing out with the person that you're having the date with. But the thought really needs to be a compassionate thought to yourself. And you literally say, thank you, negative thought. I get that you're trying to protect me. You're trying to save me. You're trying to help me out. You're trying to protect me from pain, but it's okay. I've got this.
Now I'm trying so hard. Why am I always this way on dates? I want to go home and lay down.
Okay. So this thought would be similar. It would be, look, I love that you want to run away. I love that you want to keep me safe. Really send love to these negative thoughts. I know it sounds corny, but it really works because these negative thoughts are just information. It's the self-preservatory part of your brain trying to protect you from hurt and harm. And further than that, it's actually trying to protect you from danger. It can't tell the difference between a date that you think might not be going well and a saber-toothed tiger that's going to leap at you. It's the same thing. To your midbrain, it's the same thing. Right. So reminding yourself that you're safe, that this is practice, that this is okay, and actually sending love and kindness to those thoughts, and usually they will dissipate. They will.
So in the moment, if this is something that happens on a date to you, you can actually say, you know, like key words like safe, mm-hmm. like I'm okay, mm-hmm. like, you know. I just, you know, it's okay.
Even just thank you. Even just saying I love you in your head to yourself can make a huge difference, and it can change your energy. Literally, it can change the micro expressions on your face. It can change anything that you might be projecting to that other person. It keeps you centered, right, in the more positive part of yourself. And we've talked about this before. It keeps you lined up in heart brain coherence.
Well, I've got one more that I have to do.
Okay.
Why did I order a Caesar salad? No. I don't have anything for that. You don't need anything for that, but that's just me.
Can I add one thing and then we'll bring our guest in?
Sure.
When you do have negative thoughts, don't bash yourself further. Oh, there I go with the negative thoughts again. What an idiot.
Right.
I'm trying to work on that. Just let them go. Just notice them, observe them, and release them. Right? Don't beat yourself up for beating yourself up.
Yeah, that's what seals it in a lot of the time. And that is such a common thing for me and such a common practice for a lot of people. And I say it's a common practice because even if you're not conscious about it, you're always practicing something.
You are. And when you're practicing negative thoughts without checking yourself, you're practicing that and getting better and better
and better at
more
it.
And more neural pathways. Right. So when you do what we're saying, practice it all the time. You don't have to practice it on a date. Practice it anytime you're engaging with someone else. You'll get better and better at communicating with people with more ease, right? And controlling those negative thoughts, which are a bit runaway for a lot of people.
Everything is a practice. So why not, you know, for a minute a day, practice, you know, feeling good, practice imagining something that you want. That could be a good thing. All right. Well, I want to bring in our guest now, who's been patiently waiting since the early 40s. This person, boy, I knew her a long time ago when she first started really doing stand-up. And now she is a stand-up veteran with her own special on Amazon Prime called La Vie en Rhodes. Erica Rhodes. Erica, I'm so happy to be talking to you. How are you? How's your pandemic going?
Oh, it's been great.
I don't believe you somehow.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer that. It's been up and down and all over the place, just like everybody else.
You are a person who, you know, I've seen you talk about dating. I've seen you, you know, some of your material, some of the things that you say about dating. What part of it is the most challenging for you? How do you think you want to change it?
Well, I think it's sort of what Jennifer was saying. I've decided actually to just not date right now because I just have too much work to do on myself. So I'm doing exactly what Jennifer was talking about, which is, you know, fixing my self-esteem and getting it to a place where I attract the right people instead of other toxic people.
So you've actually, you know, like taken a break, which is such a smart thing to do. Wise thing to do. And how's it going? How does it feel to not be dating? Because some people, you know, that would be tough for some people.
It actually feels great. Like I can just focus on the things I want to focus on. And I don't really feel pressure I just don't feel the pressure that I know it's like a sort of societal pressure to date or find someone, but I just don't feel, I've been single now for like a year and a half. And I don't know. I think it's really good, actually.
There's a lot of guys right now who are crying, just sobbing.
They're not calling me. They're too busy crying.
Well, yeah, they're too busy. That's the problem. Is they're so overwhelmed with this thing that you're doing here, this break that you're taking. You know,
I did go to a party the other day, and a friend of mine. Who, you know, I don't think that we would date, but it was just funny because I think he was trying to flirt with me and I didn't even get the signal that he was flirting with me. So he came and spoke to me for about 2 seconds and then he went and talked to somebody else. And then the next day he texted me and said, "Hey, are we okay?" And I was like, "Yeah, why?" And he's like, "You just seemed a little upset." And I was like, "I did?" And I said, "I was totally fine." And I said, and he goes, "Oh, I was worried." And I said, "Well, you didn't seem it. You just walked away." And he said, "Well, I tried to talk to you, but you didn't seem like you were feeling it." And I was like, "You talked to me for about 2 seconds."
and then, of course, the question is, you didn't seem like you were feeling it, but what are you feeling? What?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's sensitive or something. I don't know.
That could be.
It's so hard because all of this is really about just trying to figure out what the other person is thinking and feeling. And then you overprocess and then you overthink. And maybe because you weren't like overtly flirting, it was scary for him. And that's okay. Because I love what you said a minute ago. When you're working on yourself, and you get to a place where you're in a really good relationship with yourself, that's when someone's going to walk into your life who matches you, who's like a quality person instead of, I think you used the word toxic, right? You're going to just meet, we're walking around advertising all the time the kinds of things we want life to give us back, right? So when we're angsty and we're overthinking and we're stressing, guess what life is going to give you? More reasons to do that, literally. Right. So when you're at ease, you'll attract people who are more at ease.
Is it okay ever to say to somebody, "I'd like to talk to you right now, but I'm very busy learning how to love myself"? Is that too long?
I mean, it sounds a little bit corny.
A little.
It does. It does sound a little. You think so? You think a little bit?
Yeah, leave that one in your head. You know what else is really important, I think, for people who are dating right now or thinking about it, is you can do so much work in your own head. Like, what I would suggest is just imagine that the person, Erica, the person that you're going to meet is out there. He's out there going for lunch, going to work, doing his thing, living his life, going to yoga, whatever he's doing. He's out there, and just kind of smile and appreciate that that person is out there. Without an angst, just a letting go, just a knowing that he's out there. And
I'm a little different in that I just don't mind being alone. You know, like, it feels like to me that manifestation is like as if you're desperately needing to know someone else.
So you're right. You're right. Because there should be no angst. There should be no desperation. It's more like.
But there should be no feeling that you're missing something. Because to me,
that's a very good point. That's
you're
a good
saying,
point.
I'm missing something, but it's out there. Right. Well, what if you just what if the person is you, and so you don't need that person out there?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. There should be no angst. So this is going to sound a bit weird. So the way to do it is, and you don't have to do this. If you're like very happy, complete on your own, then don't do this. But if you are worrying about it or thinking about it at all, the way to do it is just with this lovely confidence, know that that person is out there and you will meet whenever. Could be years, could be tomorrow, could be many, many years. It's just this ease of knowing that it will happen when it happens, when it's the right moment to happen. That kind of letting go is actually really, really important.
Well, one thing that I find comforting is if you think of it like when you do meet the person, it's just so clear. Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to do this weird, you don't have to be concerned about that never happening, because you know when it does happen, it's just a very clear feeling.
Exactly.
It's not like this sort of weird, ambiguous feeling.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. You don't have to analyze every text. What did this mean? What did that mean?
Just feels like it should just be very clear.
When it's right and it's the way that it should be, it does. It has this ease to it. It has this lack of angst to it. That's quite lovely.
I used to have, I was a teaching assistant to a professor of human sexuality at Syracuse University. And he would talk about relationships like this. When you're in a mature relationship, it's very energizing. You like it. And when you're with the person you're supposed to be in love with, you're enjoying yourself. There's time for everything. There's time for showers. That's being in love. The other kind of love is immature love. Immature love is exhausting. Mm. There's no time for showers. There's no time for anything. You're busy being in love. And when you're with the person you're supposed to be in love with, you're always fighting. That's how he would sound. So I keep hearing his voice. Now, did I take any of that into account? No, I was busy doing the other thing.
There's some wisdom in there, though, right?
He was very wise. Right? Yeah. He could scare you.
Bernie Sanders?
Was he?
Very similar. Very similar. In fact, he should have run for president, this guy. Because he was very funny. And his class, of course, was the most popular class on campus because it was human sexuality. And people thought it was easy, but it was actually a really interesting class. Anyway, that's beside the point. Beside the point is, now what do you look for? Okay, let's talk about dating in a different light, though. What do you look for when you're dating a therapist? What do you look for in a therapist? Like, what's a good match there?
First, you're not supposed to date
your therapist.
I've been doing it all wrong.
I mean, the rules say you're not supposed to.
Do you mean when you're choosing a therapist?
Yeah, it's kind of like dating in a way, though. I mean, not really like that.
Matching,
I mean, you're flirting with your therapist, but like matching your therapist in the
it should feel the same. If you feel angsty, and you're dreading your appointments and you want to cancel them or you're nervous before them, it may not be the right match. It should also feel comfortable. There should be this rapport. You should feel, I mean, not that therapy should be fun and easy. It should be challenging, but you're a consumer when you're choosing a therapist. And if you don't have the right vibration, if it's not a good match, then go try someone else.
I think people don't feel that because when they're looking for a therapist, they have something that they want to work on or they need support in some area. So they immediately think, I don't know what's best for me.
Right. But you should know, it really is. It's important to have that rapport, and you should feel cared for and comforted and safe. And if you're feeling uptight and it's not working for you, then you're not going to get very much out of that relationship. It's a really important relationship. I mean, you can work on it, and you will have moments with your therapist that you'll feel off, but the two of you should be working on those together.
Have you had good ones, Erica?
I have. I've had a lot, and I had to break up with my last therapist, actually.
It is like a breakup. It's really hard. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. It was very odd because he said something. He basically accused me of faking emotion, and I was like, I'm crying. I don't think I'm faking this, you know?
That and sounds like an interesting therapist.
And before he said it, he prefaced it with, I think this, what I'm about to tell you could make you never want to speak to me again. And I just thought, well, why would you risk that? If you think this is going to make me never want to speak to you again, why would you try to say it? And then sure enough, what he said made me never want to speak to him. Yeah. So why would you say it knowingly? Yeah. You know?
Yeah, that's kind of a way to frame something. Boy, if you're going to school and training as a therapist, I'm sure that that's like one of the never do this kind of things.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was very odd that he accused me of faking an emotion, but like, what if someone were faking it? Like, I don't think I was, but say someone was faking crying. Well, don't you think that they still think that they're feeling something?
There's just some reason they're doing that, of course.
Yeah, I don't understand. Yeah. I just didn't understand what that would accomplish, accusing someone of faking an emotion.
Yeah, I don't know. That may be some
I fake my own death to get out of therapy at one point, which I think is a little extreme. but effective. But that's really interesting that I think, and when ending an association with a therapist is one of the hardest things in the world to do, mm-hmm. because there's this feeling that there has to be agreement.
Oh, this wasn't hard at all. I just never spoke to him again. I just said,
which is kind of what he said.
He already said that this would happen. So he shouldn't have been surprised.
There might have been some counter-transference there. He might have had his own issues in that moment.
It really sounds like an issue.
That's odd. I'm trying to think of what school of thought that would belong to, but I don't know. I mean, sometimes therapists challenge their clients, but I don't know if you do it that way. And I mean, pain is a great teacher, right? So when you sort of question someone about something and they feel a lot of pain, there's usually some truth there. But that way, and with that topic, I can't find a reason why.
To me, it just felt like he was invalidating my feelings, you know, rather than validating how I felt. He was saying, which was already, to me, was already the issue, was that I don't trust my feelings a lot of the time. So then it just made me, so it made it even worse.
Yeah, that's called the shaming technique.
Yeah, it felt
I don't understand
the shaming. That man was a shaman. He was shaming you.
He was a shaman. I need a shaman, and he was a shaman.
He was a shaman. Yeah. Please don't squeeze the shaman. Yeah, And that would be very, I'd be very upset with that.
I was very upset. Luckily, I was working with two therapists at the time. I have a life coach now that sort of, you know, he's not a traditional therapist, but he's done more help than most therapists have for me.
Well, I'm glad you had that, because actually that could really do some damage to someone. That's a pretty, that could leave someone quite raw and feeling quite rejected and confused.
Luckily I was already working with my coach.
Goodness.
So I talked to him about it, and he had a very different approach to the whole situation. So
good. Well, I worry about people. I mean, first of all, I'm sorry you had to go through that. And second, who didn't have someone else, right? That's a pretty.
Yeah, I'm sure I would get somebody else, but yeah, I would have felt very confused, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I'm glad that you're working with this with this life coach, because if you have, it's based on, you know, how you feel and what kind of, how you relate to the person. And if you feel like you can be yourself and you feel like you can open up to someone and you feel like you can honestly communicate, that's a good therapy. You know, that could be a good therapeutic or a good coaching relationship.
It's really about emotional safety, right? So you feel safe enough to examine your own stuff, to say what you need to say, to challenge the therapist too, because that's part of it.
Yeah, he'll challenge. He's very challenging, and it's different because I know that he has my best interest at heart. You know, when he challenges me,
that's rapport.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So he's wonderful. He's helped me a lot.
Oh, that's great. I'm so glad you have that.
That's really nice. Can I get his number off the air?
No, totally. I'll give it to you.
I'm not kidding when I say those things. But now, Erica, I'm curious, like, how has your performing, how has your stand-up changed now that you have this approach and now you've put a pause on dating and you're taking care of yourself in maybe a different way? Does that affect your stand-up?
I think so, because, you know, my coach is all about just being myself now. He's just like, you just need to be yourself and stop identifying as, because I kept saying things like my act. And he's like, stop calling it your act. You just be yourself up there.
Love that.
You know, wow. Like just be yourself, whether you're doing jokes, whether you're in a social setting. He's like, just be real. Like everything's just about being real now. And I think a lot of my stand-up has been about performing until now.
Mm. Well, and that means it's about a relationship, right? When you're authentic, when you're really just connecting, it's you and your audience, then that's a real relationship. And then you have rapport with your audience.
Yes, and trust. And then you can go to places maybe you wouldn't be able to go to before, you know? Mm. So, and I've been talking a lot. My dad passed away this year.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. So I've been talking a lot about that in my act, but a lot of comics are like, how are you getting away with talking about death and getting laughs, you know? And I think it's because I'm just being very real and authentic, and they know it's coming from a place where, you know, I'm okay while I'm talking about it.
Sure. Yeah.
So.
That's fantastic. I'm really glad to hear that, because there's it can be the greatest feeling in the world performing, but it can also be a really unconscious kind of experience. And it can also be a real fight or flight kind of experience. And you can do, you know, go ahead.
Well, I can tell when I'm on the road, you know, it's already pretty grueling, the road, right? So, but when I do shows where I feel I'm performing, like I come out and I'm like, hey, you know, like I have all this sort of fake energy, I'm exhausted.
Yeah.
Afterwards. Right. Like I just feel so drained and I have to sleep all day. But if I feel real in the moment and I'm not,
you can be energized, right?
Yeah, I actually feel much. I feel like, okay, you know, I can do an hour of that pretty easily. But I can't.
That's amazing.
Performing, because it doesn't feel real. I think that's also where stand-ups go about 10 years in. You know, I'm coming to my ninth year in. But I feel like stand-ups usually say when they get to year 10, that's when they start sounding like themselves.
Yeah, you're grounded. You find yourself. Yeah.
It is amazing that people don't, the audience doesn't, it doesn't matter what you're saying. It matters who you are and how you're being on stage. And people don't, like, it's hard to believe that. But it's really true. That's why, you know, oftentimes a comedian, you'd be watching other comics and you'd be like, you know, that material shouldn't be getting those laughs. You know, it's getting a lot of laughs. Yeah. Well, the reason is because the person is being, they're being relaxed. They're being okay with themselves.
Right? They're in a relationship with the audience, and the audience feels part of it. And that feels authentic and it feels real. And that's why, Erica, when you talked about your dad, it's very therapeutic with the audience, because they can watch you. You've moved through the pain and you can now talk about it in a different way, which gives them a lot of hope, because a lot of people in that audience will have also experienced loss to some degree. And you talk all the time about how comedy is therapy, and it is.
Well, yeah, it absolutely is. And of course, just like in therapy, the same thing applies. You want to talk about the things that are most, that are up for you, that are happening for you. Don't deny the things that are going on inside you and then put on a happy face and start telling jokes. because that's not a place that you can survive for long. You know, it's not a place that you want to live or be, because mm-hmm. it's really two things going on at the same time, which is why, you know, a lot of comics have mental health issues, because they turn it on the stage, but what they're telling themselves when they get off stage is very, you know, is very unkind and very difficult. And so
it seems interesting, because it seems like a lot of people get into stand up for the wrong reasons, you know, like it's like that usually don't have the best childhoods, and, you know, or like they've got some sort of pain or angst or anxiety, and that's why they get into it. But then I feel like to get really good at it, you almost have to get healthier mentally, mm-hmm. like to actually be really good at it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think go ahead.
So I was just going to say, in the flip too, like if you're on stage to try and get your own therapy and be loved by the audience and get healing, that, and that's your direct reason you're there, it's not going to work so well. If right. you also want to share and connect to people and help people and make them laugh in a way and help them see all the different aspects of life, then the audience is going to get healed and you're going to get healed, and it's authentic.
Yes, that definitely resonates.
Well, I didn't go into comedy to make people laugh. I really didn't. No, I, honest to God, I'm not kidding.
Why did you go into comedy, Ed?
Well, that's
I didn't.
Good, actually. That is healthier.
I went in to learn how to be myself in front of people.
Oh, I love that.
That's why I went into it. And that's why.
That's the right thing. That's what my coach says. My coach says you can't control whether they laugh or not. So you shouldn't be going up there trying to get laughs.
So true.
That doesn't mean I was good at it. It means that that was the intention, and that's kind of what I like about, you know, when there was a trend in comedy years ago, people were doing a lot of one person shows, and there was a thing about stand up where, you know, you started developing these shows in comedy clubs. This is years ago when they didn't have them, and so I developed a one man show at the Improv in San Francisco. And I had to explain to the audience the kind of show I was doing before I started. I literally had to explain it to them, because they were expecting it to be, of course, stand-up comedy. And it was comedic, but it was more storytelling. And it was more beginning, middle, and end. And so that was an interesting, you know, process. It's never good for comedy when you have to explain it, of course. But I started just handing out leaflets. No, but it was so great for me when I could be my whole self in front of people and actually be funny and real. And that was the best feeling in the world. See, that's a really good feeling. The thing about that thing is people will remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I realize, first of all, it's interesting that you felt you had to explain it, because what if you just hadn't explained it? You know, what if you just allowed to figure it out?
Part of it was that because nobody was doing this and people came in with a certain expectation, almost the club owners almost wanted to orient these audiences to what they were going to see, because, you know, they're expecting Evening at the Improv. I mean, they're expecting, you know, jokes and certain kind of stand-up.
That makes sense. So,
you know, it was definitely an interesting experiment. But when I felt I could tell stories and I would just be naturally funny in the stories and be everything that I was home.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. So that's my goal as well. I mean, I don't feel that I'm intrinsically a joke teller, you know. I don't really feel like that's my nature to be, you know. You see some of these New York comics and they're like joke machines. They just joke. And I think I'm much more of a storyteller too.
Well, you're a good joke writer and a good joke teller, so you can do those things, but there's a lot more going on, and you're an actress too. And so there's a lot that can go on. I mean, when you watch Richard Pryor live in concert, you realize, you know, that guy is raw and he's brilliant and he's acting out and living those moments in front of an audience. He's reliving them and they're absolutely brilliant. So he's being his whole self when he's doing stand-up. And that's what it looks like. It looks like, you know, they used to say years ago, they used to say, we like performers that leave a little something on stage for you. They leave a piece mm-hmm. of themselves on stage for you. You can take that. It with you. And you do that by, now I'm talking to you theoretically now. I'm not saying that I could do this every night or that I even did it a lot, but I am saying that it's a good thing to remember when you're a performer.
Well, yeah, because if you think about it, a lot of it is just, you know, what do you want to see for an hour? I mean, what interests you as an audience member? Because even I get tired of jokes after a while, you know?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
When they're just hitting me with joke, I think halfway through, I think, wow, they have a lot of jokes.
You want to go on a journey, right? You want to have an experience. Yeah.
And then I leave thinking, wow, they're a really impressive joke writer, but what am I left with? Like, do I feel different or am I left with some new knowledge or who is that person? Like, I like a performer who tells me a little bit more about who they are.
And that sometimes, every once in a while, you get into performers who are absolutely silly and crazy, but they're being so childlike. It's like a childlike part of themselves. Like Kevin Meaney, rest his soul, years ago. Kevin Meaney would go in front of an audience. He was a very high energy comic, and he would tell purposeful, bad one-line jokes.
Yeah.
Like purposely bad. And then the audience would turn on him, and then he would start singing this song. I don't care. I don't care. My jokes don't go over. I don't care. And he would start running around the stage. And I've seen him do that a million times in all kinds of difficult situations, and you're laughing your head off.
And he wins the audience back?
You're laughing your head off because he's being silly, and it's really a part of him.
But that's what Eric is saying. That's a takeaway too, right?
Yeah, it's childlike humor. And I saw him follow Robin Williams, and he did fantastically well. He could do anything. And then I've seen other comics who, you know, Jeff Bolt is a great example in San Francisco. He was a guy who would be very mild-mannered, and he would follow these high-energy acts, and the audience would come to him because he was confident in who he was, and he was being who he was.
Yeah, well, something. Oh, sorry.
No, go. I can. That's fine.
No, I was just thinking that's something you really see with established comics where they can follow anyone because they own their space. Like they don't try to be who was before them, or they don't try to match them. They reset the table with their energy.
And now Bill Hicks used to tell me this all the time. I know I sound like I'm 90 years old, but Bill used to tell me all the time. He'd say, whoever came before you or is ever going after you, that's your show. And that's why he always liked to come up to his own music. He would pick it and he'd say, because once that music goes on, it's my show. And I'm doing the whole thing. And he was an absolute genius. Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say what I'm hearing, which is so interesting. And it even goes back to dating. It's really about having the relationship with yourself, being comfortable with who you are. And whether it's an audience of a few hundred people or it's an audience of one on a date, it's the same principle.
Yes.
Right.
I will say this. And I'm going to, before we wrap up, there's two things. One is, I actually had a job when I first came to LA. They had unusual jobs that you could go to this agency called the Job Factory. One of my jobs was I got a job as a pretend dater. They would give me a stipend and I would go out and have pretend dates with people who were petrified to go on dates.
What a cool job that is.
I was a pretend dater. They'd give me money for the dinner and a little bit left over. And I would actually go out trying to help people be at ease with something that they were terrified of. And I was called a pretend dater.
Did you get any real dates out of it?
I didn't because I'm so good at repelling people. And then I was not a pretend repeller, but I was a pretend dater. But honest to God, that's like a weird story.
That's insane. That's crazy.
But the other thing, I wanted to just wrap up with this.
I have a question for Jennifer before we wrap up, but I can ask her after that.
No, no, go right now.
But the biggest issue for me, I would say, with dating is if I'm not feeling it, how do you end it politely without being a total jerk when you're just like, that's I'm just question. Not feeling it, I just want to get out? Because that's my biggest problem is wanting to get out of it.
Yeah, and then you're trapped, right?
Yeah, you're always trapped.
And you know pretty early usually. You can kind of feel if it's going, and then you just have to be. So it's interesting because we've talked on the show many times about the difference between being nice and being kind.
Yeah, interesting.
And being nice is like, oh, I've had a wonderful time, but I have to go. I got to, you know, you make up some excuse why you have to leave. But that's actually not even giving the person sitting in front of you accurate feedback. And we'll get to what being kind would look like. But just faking it, then how are people supposed to figure out the date didn't work, right?
Right.
So it's really by being kind. Just, you know what? I've had a lovely time, or you know, we had a time. But the truth is, I'm just not feeling it. I appreciate taking me out, and it was nice meeting you. But I'm just feeling like we just don't seem to have the chemistry, and it's been nice meeting you. Right, that's being kind, because that's the truth, first of all. And you're not saying something that, because if you make up a whole story that's not true, your own body isn't going to like how that feels anyway.
Right.
And you don't have to do it in a mean way. You can, because it really is just about chemistry, and you can't plan that.
I finally did do that with, I did go on it one date this whole time, like a very casual coffee date. And then he wanted to get dinner. And at first I thought, okay, yeah, I would get dinner with him. But then he started texting me these long, long texts. And he's a really nice guy. But I just, it's like, it was very overwhelming to me when I don't know the person well to get paragraph texts that I had to read, you know. So then I just said, and this was actually hard for me. But I texted him, you know, I've thought about it. And honestly, I just don't feel a connection in a dating way. But I'm happy. Be friends.
There it is. That's it. You just answered your own question. That's exactly what you do. That is actually kind. It's kind to you. It's kind to them.
Yeah.
Because then he can go back and go, I wonder what I did. Maybe it was the long text, and maybe he can adjust that next time. Right. So if we're not really honest in a kind way with each other, how can anyone figure out what they need to tweak and change anyway? And I think you did it perfectly. And it's hard to do. We're not trained to do that. We're not raised to do that. But honestly, it's the right thing to do. It really is.
I know in the past I may have ghosted, or maybe, you know, tried to keep coming up with excuses till he got the hint, you know,
Your body is going to tell you the right answer. And when you think of making up an excuse or going to dinner when you don't want to, you're going to feel a heavy anchor.
Yes, that's what I used to act on that opposite my intuition. So I used to feel like I don't want to go, and then I would force myself to go.
Miserable. And your body will tell you. Your body is literally screaming at you. And when you actually did that and you said, thank you, you know what, I just don't really feel the chemistry, didn't you feel lighter? Didn't you feel relieved?
So much lighter, yes.
That's how you know you're making a good decision.
Yeah.
A bad decision will feel heavy in your body and kind of icky. Mm-hmm. And a good decision will feel free, and you will feel lighter. And your body's talking to you all the time. We just need to pay attention.
Yeah. That's a lot of what I've been working on.
Great. That's amazing. That will serve you well. It really will.
It's great to hear that. And it is very clear, and it's very, you know, it's very respectful. It's very kind. That is really the kind thing to do. And people would
find it harder to do in person. Like if I'm face to face with someone, that's still a challenge.
Yeah, it is for most people. It really is. But it's sort of having the bigger picture that you're actually being so much nicer to that person. Because let's say you didn't do that, right? And you went on three more dates because you felt like you wanted to be nice. That poor person is now more invested in you.
Yeah.
More hopeful when there never should be hope. And you've really just made them feel 1,000 times worse.
Yeah.
Right.
You've made it possible. You made it possible. It's a gift in a way. It doesn't feel like a gift in the moment, but what's happened is you've made it more possible for them to meet the person that is right for them.
Exactly.
Right. And not waste. Yeah. You're not wasting anyone's time.
Yeah.
Right.
But I also don't think people should feel like a pressure to try to make something work when you instinctually know it's not gonna work.
Well, that goes back to Ed's professor. If you're working too hard at it, it's not right.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not right. Right. And
I was just going to say this, Ed,
because sometimes people get super picky and they're on the other end and the person does one small thing. Like you don't like how he folded his napkin and you're out. Like you also have to be really honest with yourself about.
Am I giving them a chance?
Yes. Yes. And am I giving myself a chance or am I just bolting? Maybe we could do another, have another conversation about that, right? Because you can go too far the other way. But
well, that's what I thought for a second I was doing when I said yes to dinner, but then the texting happened and I thought, I just don't think so.
No, that's why you didn't question it because your body told you. It was like, oh,
yeah.
What am I doing? Like, you don't have to question that. You know it.
Right.
We're literally living in virtual reality suits. That's our body and our brain. And it's giving us information all the time. We just really suck at listening to it.
Yeah, that's what it's so interesting. It's so in line with what I'm working on.
Great. So,
yeah. Well, there's no coincidence in you coming on this show today. And I'm so I'm really just so happy that you're doing these things for yourself. I think it's really great. And I think it's
meditating too.
Oh wow.
So good. Well, that's such a gift. Yeah.
Not to make everyone feel bad.
That's the most important thing. And can you picture somebody coming out and saying, yeah, I'm meditating. What about you guys? I am the world's greatest meditator. You people suck at meditating. You're a horrible meditator. And you're not evolved. And I don't really like you. And I don't need it from you people. I think you're going to come back. We're going to talk about I definitely want to talk to you about meditation, but we're going to talk about a bunch of other things too.
Do you meditate?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. And
what kind do you do?
I do apps and I also had a Vedic meditation teacher. So 20 minutes a day, twice a day.
That's what I do.
Oh, Vedic is great. Well, all right.
I do TM, which is the same. You do 20 minutes twice a day.
Well, we're going to talk about that for sure. And we're going to meditate on the air. So that's, I'm not kidding.
That'll be like, what's his name? John, what's the guy's name? The 4 minutes, John Cage. John Cage is a composer who did a 4 minute.
Oh, John Cage. Yeah.
4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence.
Well, we're going to, boldly, we're going to do a show about silence next time. No, I'm kidding. I'm not kidding. It's not that we're going to be silent, but we're going to talk about, silence. I used to go to Quaker meetings where they actually call for silence in a group of people. It's amazing. I hope that when you're listening to the Mental Health Comedy Podcast, you're not thinking, if there would just be silence for a little while on the show, that would be interesting. But I want to thank you, Erica. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you, Ed and Jennifer. This flew by. Wow. I can't believe
it went fast.
That's Erica Rhodes. And you can find her special, La Vie en Rhodes, on Amazon Prime. And you'll love it. And she's amazing. And it was a pleasure having Erica. And Jennifer, thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
I appreciate it so much. Learned so much from you every time. I want you to go to connectedparenting.com. You can find out more about Jennifer's work and books and media and classes and all kinds of things, that are useful and helpful in living happier, living healthier. And I want to thank you for listening. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe. We're on the Believe Network, which is BLEAV.com. Write, if you want, to Ed at Make Light Media, MakeLight. You can find the podcast there too and all the show notes, MakeLightMedia.com, MakeLight. Well, keep coming back. It works if you work it. Take good care of yourselves, and we'll see you next time.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big money at Menards.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.